Welcome into the NHL at the Rink podcast. Dan Rosen here, Sean Rourke out there. Sean, we've got two 12 seeds as we record this Thursday morning that have a 2-1 lead in their series. Montreal beating Pittsburgh 4-3 last night to go up 2-1. And same result, Chicago beating Edmonton 4-3. Anything can happen in the playoffs or the NHL postseason, right?
Yeah, you know, it's been unbelievable. And I was so excited to talk about this today that I'm sitting in my car outside the library in my hometown because I have no power, no internet, no nothing. And I had to find a way to get on and join you. As people may know, we're both in New Jersey and we had a horrible storm rip through here a couple of days ago. But there was nothing that was going to stop me from talking about this because it's been unbelievable. You look at the first couple of days, you have two 12 seeds on the verge of advancing and an 11 seed doing the same thing. It's August anarchy instead of March madness, I guess.
It is. And let's also note that your daughter is in the back seat of the car siphoning the internet from the library as well. So, hey, it's legendary that you have come out and you found the mobile office. It's great. But you know what? Anything can happen here. We're talking about two teams in Montreal and Chicago. I think we can both agree we're not going to be in the Stanley Cup playoffs if the season never had to pause, if we never had any issue going on. Yet now they're here. They get an opportunity playing with house money, so to speak, because if they lose, they have a 12.5% chance of getting the number one pick in the draft too. And I think that they're playing looser. I think that you're seeing it at times that not loose in this style of play, but just loose in the mind, you know, free in the mind to be able to just go and play. And you're seeing guys like Jonathan Toews step up in a major way. I think it's a big difference between a team that is playing with house money versus two teams in Pittsburgh and Edmonton that are playing with the pressure of having the team being the team that is supposed to win. And we'll touch on this too with Hal Gill, our first guest. We also have Brady Shea from the Carolina Hurricanes. But Sean, what's your take on that? Like, these two teams are playing with house money in my mind, and they're playing well with it.
Yeah, I think there's some of that. But I also think, look, we've been away for so long that these teams don't look anything like the teams when the season ended, right? They've had an opportunity to get healthy. They've had an opportunity to reimagine themselves a little bit. And they've had an opportunity to restore their confidence. And one of the things that's really struck me in this is, like, you look at the Canadians, right? And it's Carey Price, and he's been the huge difference maker like we all thought he would be. But then it's a couple of young kids who had an opportunity to rest from what was a long season and in cases a troubling season. You know, Suzuki's been good for them. Kotkaniemi's been good for them, and he was in Laval. He wasn't even playing for them. He had a strong camp. He came back. He makes their lines work a little bit better. And then you look at Chicago, and it's Kirby Dach. And he comes right out of junior, plays a huge season, starts hurt, you know, gets 60 games under his belt. That's a full season for these teenage kids. Now he's starting to drag a little bit going into the end of the season, and he gets a chance to rest. He played more than anybody last night in that win over the Oilers. Like, and he was a dominant player. I thought he was really good. He has not shied away from playing against the Edmonton Oilers and Draisaitl and McDavid and all of that. It's not a straight matchup. I wouldn't suggest that, but he's clearly held his own in there. And then the other thing with the Blackhawks is some of those older guys, you know, that were maybe running out of runway at the end of the season all of a sudden are rejuvenated. Toews has been fantastic. Keith's been good. Like, these were guys that maybe the gas tank was getting a little empty at the end of the year, and they've had a chance to get healthy, get fresh, and then be able to say, we've won before. We know how to do it. We're going up against an Edmonton team that's never won a series. You know, maybe we got a chance here.
Yeah, it's interesting. Kirby Dach, you're right. I was just looking it up as you were talking. He played 23 minutes and 21 seconds. In game three, 24 shifts. That's the most minutes of any forward on the Blackhawks. Duncan Keith played over 26 minutes, but he's a defenseman. So that is an impressive showing. He played more than Patrick Kane. He played more than Jonathan Toews. That is something else right there with the trust also that Jeremy Colleton has in Kirby Dach. The other thing, but the flip side to this is, you know, you have Edmonton, you have Pittsburgh. I want to look at Pittsburgh in particular, Sean. What do you do in goal? What does Mike Sullivan do now as he approaches game four, a must win on Friday night. Pittsburgh, you know, Matt Murray's been okay. I don't know that you necessarily say he's been the reason that they're down 2-1 in the series. He actually had a strong game two. But do you switch it to Tristan Jarry just to jolt your team, you know, as a jolt for your team?
I don't know if you can, and we're going to talk with Hal Gill because the Predators are, I think, in the same position. But I don't know if you can roll those kind of dice at this point, you know, to take a goalie who hasn't played yet in the series and say, here, the season's on the line. You know, you go out and do it. Again, you look at the Preds, and they made that choice with UC Saros. He goes out, and in the first period, he gives up 3 goals. The first one is just a complete pinball oddity, but still puts him on his back heel, and he never really recovers from that until later in the game. But the game's already gone for them. So, you know, it's a really tough decision. I don't know that Murray's the problem. To me, the problem is, one, they're not scoring, and that maybe has something to do with Carey Price. I thought he was really good after the back-to-back power play goals last night. You know, and then the other problem is they're not playing great defense. I mean, this is a Montreal team that had problems scoring all along. You get them down 3-1, you know, they score that first goal, and now you put 3 on them, 2 really quick, and you're rolling. That game should have been shut down. The Penguins should be on the verge of saying, we're playing to advance. And somehow they give up 3 goals, you know, like I said, to a team that just is not fluent in offense for the most part. Mm-hmm. You know, to me, there's bigger problems than Matt Murray. It's just that commitment to a 200-foot game, and I'm not really seeing it.
I agree, but I would switch to Tristan Jarry. That's my opinion. I would go with Jarry in the next game. I would think it sends a signal. It's a jolt to your team. He's a very good goalie. He had a very good season. I would make that switch if I was Mike Sullivan right now. I don't think it's hitting a panic button switch, but I think it's just changing something up to send a bit of a jolt into your team, like I said, and I would do it. And I don't know that I would do it if I was Nashville, though. That's the difference. I don't know that I would change from UC Saros. And I don't know that Nashville needs the jolt. And we'll talk about, like you said, we have Hal Gilani's from the Predators Radio Network, a Stanley Cup winner with the Pittsburgh Penguins. We're going to get him on here shortly. But Nashville yesterday, I thought, had the jolt against the Coyotes and just couldn't score because Darcy Kuemper was that good. Whereas Pittsburgh, they were up 3-1. As you said, they couldn't lock it down. They didn't play the right way. Nashville played, I think, the right way almost all the way through the game. And just a couple of little errors in the game that unfortunate timing were the difference in them being down 2-1 in their series against Arizona.
You know what? I forget all the strategy and everything else. How funny is it, or not funny is it, that a couple of weeks ago we were talking about how none of those three teams in Arizona, Montreal and Chicago belonged in this tournament, and that it was just a favor that was being done, and it wouldn't be competitive. You know, there's such a fine line between a good team and an average team in this league. You know, you throw Detroit out of the mix this year because they were not very good. They weren't competitive. I don't know that they're that far away from being competitive. But then you take all those other teams and you look at them, and the lines of demarcation, other than the truly elite teams, is so fine that once you put them in a series and you get a couple of variables going, a hot goaltender, an injury, you know, whatever it might be, they become equals. And that, again, that's just the beauty of playoff hockey. Like, think about all the upsets in the last few years. For people to think that there couldn't be upsets in this first round, especially because we had no idea how any of these teams were going to come back, to me is kind of laughable.
Well, also think about this. So the Carolina Hurricanes lost 4 games in the regular season to the Rangers, all 4. They were outscored 17-9. That series, the only one that's over so far, was not even close. Carolina blew the doors off of the Rangers in that series. They were by far the better team in probably at least 7.5 of the 9 periods. The Dallas Stars beat the Colorado Avalanche 4 times in the regular season. And that game that they played Wednesday night was not close. Colorado dominated that game. So you hear it all the time about what happened in the regular season. Does it matter? And you always hear players and coaches saying, it doesn't matter. You throw it out. Guys aren't thinking about that. This is just more example of the reason that they're right. You do throw it out. It doesn't matter. Carolina couldn't compete at times with the Rangers in the regular season. The Rangers' goaltending was terrific in some of those games, but other games it was the Rangers were just better. Same thing with Colorado and Dallas. And then it was completely reversed in the last week.
And you know what? You just mentioned some of those teams, and it hit me as you were talking about it. Like, those are fast teams, right? And I think early on in the playoffs, the speed is really killed. I think as we go along, it's going to become a little more even. Guys are going to get tired. They're going to get banged up. You know, we're going to put a lot of hockey mileage on people really quickly in this tournament. But coming out of the break and having fresh legs and being able to do a lot of stuff. So, you know, we talked about some of those young kids. They're going to get back up to speed faster. The teams that play really fast, like that Colorado team, is just fast, and they swarm and they never let up. And you know, so they're having a lot of success. Carolina, to me, Carolina was all over the Rangers, like from go, you know, big hits, fight, the whole thing went on. But it was just, they're suffocating. That first game, the Rangers couldn't get out of their own end. And then when they, on the rare occasion, they did get into the Carolina end, they couldn't string together two passes. The Hurricanes were all over them. So, you know, early on, it seems like speed is really kind of coming to the forefront, and it's going to take a while to be able to shut some of these guys down and, you know, kind of take the turbo button off. But it's going to happen, because nobody's going to be able to maintain this pace for, you know, through October. So I think they'll come back to earth a little bit, and you know, but now, you know, as we sit here and we talk about this, and Friday is going to be such an unbelievably crazy day, but these championship pedigree teams have to tap into what makes them championship pedigree teams, and that's the ability to put adversity behind them. You know, if the Penguins can force a game five, if the Predators can force a game five, they have a ton of experience, and that should help them. You know, the Edmonton-Chicago series is a little different, because I think the underdog is the one that has that championship pedigree, and in a game five can say, hey, we've been here. We've been here against the Kings. We've been here against the Canucks. We've won. We've been here against the Bruins, and we won when we shouldn't have won. You know, we have that DNA, and we can call upon it. So, today is going to be great, but tomorrow is going to be fantastic.
Yeah, and before we get to Hal Gill, who will be our first guest, and by the way, you brought up the big hits at the start of that Carolina series. Brady Shea was the one who set the tone for that with a huge hit on Jesper Fast early in game one. We're going to have him on. We'll talk to him a little bit about that as well. But you brought up the speed element, Sean, and that's why I am worried about teams like Boston, Washington, St. Louis, Dallas. Those are four teams in the round robin. Boston has not looked good. Dallas has not looked good. Can't say the same about St. Louis, and you can't say the same about Washington yet, but not speed teams. And I have a concern for some of these teams. You know, they were the elite teams in the league during the regular season, but you're flying out of the gate now, and they are lagging behind, in my opinion.
Yeah, I think there's a little of that. I think you're also not, probably in the case of the round robins, you're not seeing teams at their full strength. Like, you look at Boston, and you know, Pastrnak didn't practice at all before the round robin started. You know, they still don't have a couple of guys in their lineup. They've taken guys out and put other guys in to try and find a mix. I think they're taking it seriously, but not seriously to the point that maybe some of these other teams are, and it ended up hurting Boston. They can be no higher than the 3 seed now. They're the President's Trophy winner, and the reward for all of that could be to play Carolina in the first round, which would just be not a great matchup, I don't think, for them. I just look at it, and I see teams trying to find their way. You know, you look at Tampa Bay, they're trying to find their way. No Steven Stamkos, Hedman came in late, and all of that. So I'm trying to take it with a grain of salt. This is the time when you panic after every game, and oh my god, the sky's falling. Yes. And then the next day you're like, oh my god, things are wonderful. Look, the Penguins after game two, everybody had put them on to the next round because they were so good, and then game three comes and they, you know, they fall apart. That's the beauty of playoff hockey, is it's just these huge ebbs and rises, and you know, it's a roller coaster. So I'm curious, you know, what's going to happen when they get into a playoff round and they have an opponent that they can identify and they can they can target what they're going to do. Because for a lot of these teams that we talk about, you know, what they're best at is in a seven-game series is taking away the other team's best players and making that team win with lesser. So the one team that I am truly concerned about, though, is the Dallas Stars. They haven't won since February. You know, I think, what is it, 9 games in a row now they've lost? Completely outmatched against Columbus. I mean, against Colorado. They really need to find a way. But again, the most amazing thing is we've been on the air for how long right now? And we haven't talked about maybe the greatest moment of the playoffs so far, which was the Nazem Kadri goal with 0.1 seconds left. That's how crazy this first week has been.
Well, it was either that or Jean-Gabriel Pageau faking a punch at Brian Boyle and Brian Boyle not even flinching. That was great, too, because I think Pageau needs a ladder to hit to nail that punch. Anyway, you need a ladder. We need a ladder to catch up to Hal Gill, too. He was one of the tallest players. But let's get to that interview we caught up with Hal Gill, former NHL defenseman, now with the Nashville Predators Radio Network. We talked all about the Predators and went around the league with him a little bit, too. So here's that interview with Hal Gill. Hal, thanks so much for jumping on with us. It's August. We have playoff hockey, or postseason hockey, I should say. What's it been like for you trying to keep up with everything?
It's been crazy. You know, usually I go to the rink and I throw on a suit. Now it's like I'm sweating. It's Nashville in August is not dry and it's not cold. So it is, it's been crazy. And then just hockey everywhere. I come home at 11 o'clock and hockey's on and I'm watching it all day and I'm trying to do stuff with the kids and trying to be a husband and a father and it's and hockey's on. I think the world should shut down for a bit so we can take it all in.
Hal, you definitely have papal dispensation. If you need a note, just let the boys here at the rink know, and we'll send one to the family. You're paying close attention to the Predators. But before we get to them, is there another series that's kind of captured your fancy?
Well, I have two former teams that are duking it out, and I never expected it. But Pittsburgh and Montreal has been kind of fun to watch. I feel like you just expect Sid and Malkin to just rise above and win it. And it's not that easy, is it? I love the way that the Habs are being pesky and giving them everything they got. So Price has been unbelievable. So I've enjoyed watching that series. I think there's a lot of series though that I'm finding kind of interesting. That Edmonton and Chicago series is another good one last night. I just think I couldn't stay up for that one, but it's fun tracking those guys. The star levels are showing in the NHL, I think.
I definitely – look, we're going to get to the Predators, but I wanted to eventually get to that Penguins-Habs series with you. So let's do it now since you brought it up. Look, I mean, and I guess in the same case with the Blackhawks too, the idea here is that Montreal is kind of playing with house money, right? And they weren't going to be in the playoffs if the season continued on, and here's their chance. Is that what we're seeing here, a team playing loose, a team playing free – versus a team in Pittsburgh who might have a little bit of that pressure on them because they're supposed to win. They're supposed to be there.
Well, I think you're sad. If you think you're supposed to win a series the way this is all played out, you're going to be sadly mistaken and be out quicker. I think it's the way everything is set up, it's anyone's game. But that being said, you're the Penguins. You're supposed to just roll over. What is it, 5 versus 12? You're supposed to do it. You're supposed to beat them. I think Carey Price has really stood on his head and been amazing. But I think that's the beauty of a series, of especially 5-game series, is that anything can happen. And you look at the Habs, they're going to give everything they got. Like you said, there's nothing. And I hate to say this, but if you lose, Lafreniere is right there. He's right within your grasp. So I think that's something that if you're a Habs fan, what a great time of year. You can either beat the Penguins or vie for the first overall.
Unfortunately, not that many people in Montreal care, right? Like, it's not that big a deal.
Yeah, they're not even watching.
How different is it as a player in a 5-game series? Like, you win that first game and both the Coyotes and the Canadiens as the 12 seeds did it. Now you're 2 wins away. Like, even in a seven game series, you still have to, you win that first one, you still have to win three more, makes it a little more difficult. Do you think that's played a little bit into this? Like you're almost halfway there with one win.
Yeah. It's kind of crazy, isn't it? And I've never gone through this. I don't know what it's like in these locker rooms to be down. I will tell you, you know, John Hines was asked after the game, which is kind of a tough question, but someone asked, how does it feel to be 60 minutes away from elimination? He said quickly, we're 60 minutes away from a game five as well. So it can turn quick. And that's the fun part of a five-game series, is that anything can happen. You win a game and you go on a bit of a roll, and it doesn't need to be a big roll. You just win the next game and you're right back in it. So nothing's ever done. It's so hard to close. And that's the constant here, is it's so hard to close out a team. When a team's got its back against the wall, it's tough to knock them out. So I don't care how many games you have in a series. It's tough to punch out a team.
I saw that John Hines post game, and it was like a defiant answer. You know, it was, and I thought he was going to elaborate, Hal, a little bit more, and then it just no. That was we're also 60 minutes away from forcing a game five, and that was it. It was defiance. Do the Predators have a defiance about them? Do you think? I mean, they played well yesterday. They did, and they lost 4-1. Is there a defiance about this team? Have you seen enough from them to think that they are going to, say, feel that same way and play that same way that their coach obviously reacted with?
Yeah, I think the hockey gods usually come around and straighten things out. I thought the Preds outplayed the Coyotes, but that's a lot about the Coyotes' game, right? They just kind of lull you into thinking you have this, and then all of a sudden they get a nice goal, they go get the lead, and then they're tough to beat when they have a lead. So you want to believe that if you play the right way and do the right things and dominate a game the way I think that they did in game three, that it's going to work out. And so that's all you can is believe in that and go back and say, if we do this the right way, play with a little more urgency, play with a little more jam, that, you know, you always want to give a little more. You just can't give too much, because then you're giving up something else. So, you know, I think the Preds are looking at it as we can throw the nail in the coffin here. If we get up here and put this team away early, then we're looking at game five. And I think that's their defiance. I think that's what John Hines is saying. And I that's the first time I've seen John Hines really show anger and show determination. I hope the team listens to that and hears it. If I was a player for John Hines, I would have loved it. I would have loved to have heard that. Like, no, don't count us out, man. We're right back in this thing.
I mean, you could argue that the Predators have won seven out of the nine periods. So they don't keep score for the periods, but they certainly have dominated the majority of this series. I guess the biggest question going into the next game is, what does John do about goaltending? Nobody's going to put this at UC's feet. You know, that first period, a couple of deflected goals. He hasn't played poorly, but is that the ultimate wake-up call to tap Pekka on the shoulder and say, here you go, save our season?
It's a tough one, man. I don't know. I think Juice played fantastic. You know, I guess if I was a coach, I'd be talking to the goaltending coach. I'm sure there's analytics that'll lean one way or the other. But both of these guys I would put in my net and believe in. So I haven't changed my mind on Juice. I think he's played fantastic. It's hard to look at Pekka and say, you're not our goalie. I mean, the guy has done so much for Nashville, has been the rock back there for them for years. So you put him in and maybe you get an emotional lift. But I feel like they have been playing with emotion. So I don't know. It's a tough decision. I'd hate to be – this is why coaching is tough. It's because you have to make hard decisions like this. Do you make lineup changes? Do you go through and tinker with the lineup after you really – you just said you dominated a game and you should have won. You go back with the same thing, and if you don't, should you have done something different if you lose it? So those are the tough decisions. I don't have the answers for you. I would take either goalie and put them out there and believe in them.
It's interesting too, right? I mean, we we get into the point of overanalyzing at times too, right? How, I mean, and I think a coach can be guilty of it too. I mean, look, if Matt Duchene doesn't cross over, he's onside, there's a goal. If Matthias Ekholm doesn't shade over to the right too far, he's in position to stop Connor Garland, and maybe they don't score the go-ahead goal there, right? So those little details in the game that can force an over, you know, force overanalyzing. So, that's where you've got to be careful, right? I mean, you got to be careful not to look too deep into what may not be a problem, right?
Yeah, not to get cliche, but it is a series of moments. A game is defined by the moments, and yeah, that's you say, okay, Duchene, stay on side. Well, that happens all the time during a game, and the game just keeps rolling. But it's on a goal, and it's a detail that wasn't, Duchene just an inch away from being on sides. It's not a big deal, but it's a huge deal because that goal changes that game and the whole flow of everything that happens in that game. Now, I don't want to say Matthias Ekholm was off. I'd rather say that Garland stood up and made a big play at the right time, and Stepan made a beautiful pass, and they did it together. And that's the fun part about the playoffs, is those moments, you never know when they're going to happen. But what a highlight reel goal. I mean, that Garland goal was awesome. To be able to shoot it from basically in between his legs and get that much steam on it and pick a corner, I look at that as someone stood up, and you're looking around your locker room in the playoffs and you're saying, who's our guy that's going to stand up and make that big play? And whether it's a defensive play, a save, or a goal, there's a bunch of those plays that happen the whole game, and you're just sitting there waiting to see which one is going to be that moment that everyone talks about after the game. So that's why I love playoff hockey, because it is all about those moments. Everything's under a magnifying glass.
Obviously, we've all paid a lot of attention to these best of five series because of the drama and what's at stake. But it's almost like there's another tournament going on at the same time, which is the round robins and the seedings, and clearly not as important because all those teams are in the playoffs. They're just kind of playing for seedings. But when you look at a team like Boston or a team like Dallas, neither one of them have looked really well. If you're a player on one of those teams, are you concerned at this point?
It's kind of a weird, is it exhibition games? Is it real? I've watched a couple of them, and then I saw Boston throwing punches with Tampa, and I'm like, okay, maybe this is real. You know, the guys are getting heated. But it really is a different tournament. It's a different feel. I don't think there's much to be gained from blowing it out to try to win those games. But at the same time, you want to be playing well. So if I'm on those teams and, we're not coming out well as good as we think we are, maybe when it's time to tighten the screws, you're a little more urgent. If you're going through and you're feeling confident, you're just rolling through, then, maybe you're overconfident. So it's a balance. And I think this is the hard part about managing your emotions and managing what your expectations are of yourself and of your team. So we'll find out when it all settles down and we get to it's crazy to think that after these series are done, you're going to have a regular playoff series coming up, the Stanley Cup playoffs. It's kind of crazy, isn't it, to think that this isn't even the real stuff. We're going to get into four series that are going to be awesome. So I'm looking forward to seeing how it all shakes out.
You know, it's interesting, though. I think of a team like Colorado, right, who's not been there, not done that, and they're a team that everybody looks at and says they have a lot going on for them right now. I think what they did to Dallas yesterday in a 4-0 win was huge, number one. It was they were terrific, but also kind of sends a message about how good they are and how serious they're taking this, especially these round-robin games. I wonder how can you look at it from that perspective for teams too, that if you play well in these round robin games, you're also sending a message to whoever you're going to be playing in the first round of the playoffs too. Like, hey, we mean business right now.
Yeah. That urgency is get your attention. I'll tell you that. But I think Colorado is a team that I think most teams, you look at the, I just see what McKinnon skate down the ice once, and he's got my attention. So, you know, I think that's something to be said. That's the confidence that you get from winning and the urgency that you get from losing. And that it's a delicate balance. And so I don't know. I want to say that, hey, you know, you look at a team like the Avalanche who roll over the Stars. But they have 40 shots on goal. Just they're all over them.
Yeah.
You know, it's how do you not root for that team? And if you're watching them, how are you not scared of them? But it's going to be a new series next round, and those guys are going to be ready for it, whether they're urgent or confident or both. That's the idea, right? You want to be both.
You just mentioned Nathan McKinnon, and earlier you talked about the skill level coming out in the Edmonton and Chicago series. And these first few games have been an unbelievable testament to especially the young talent that's in this league. You look at Carolina, who's already advanced with Aho and those guys. I'm curious, as a former defenseman and somebody who's dealt with a lot of high-end forwards during your career, who would be the guy today that would give you the biggest nightmares the night before a game, knowing you had to defend him?
Yeah. Well, you know what? It's kind of funny because you look through all these stars and they do so many things differently. I feel like obviously McDavid, you know, he'll give you the speed wobble skating backwards. And that's the scariest thing, right? Is when he's coming through the neutral zone and you're trying to keep up with him, you know, good luck. Good luck trying to keep a gap on him. McKinnon, he can turn on a dime. So if he gets into the offensive zone or he gets a speed burst, you're chasing, and when he zigs and zags, and you know, he can turn you around pretty quick. Aho, the way he controls his edges and can make a – I mean, like that play where he's going extended stick, able to go top shelf, you're hoping that if you get a guy off of his edges and leaning a little bit, he's not going to be able to go bar down. That's tough to defend. If you know, sometimes you just want to knock a guy down, and if he gets a shot off, at least it won't be good. But the skill level of these players is too much. And then I look at Draisaitl and I go, oh, he really hasn't done anything. And then all of a sudden the puck just pops onto his stick. You know, he had, I think, two goals the other night that I was watching that the puck just got onto his stick. And you're going, how does that even happen? Some players just know where to be and the right spots to be. So you have to keep an eye on them the whole time. But defensively, there's so many great players that play both ends of the ice. But defense is so hard, especially against the skill level in the NHL right now. I think there's a lot of guys that would give me nightmares. But I would love that challenge. And I think the more you see all the skill level rise to the top, the more important it is in the playoffs to have good, solid defensemen to take care of them. And that's where these guys rise up and get the job done. And that's where you're going to see good defensive defensemen back in the game and still hanging in there, not just the offensive guys.
You talk about skill level. Just in terms of the play on the ice, what we've seen, these guys were off for 4.5 months, and they come back and they're playing like this. Do you, when you watch these games or you call a game, are you watching and saying, well, that's playoff hockey? We are seeing playoff hockey. Are they at that level for you as you watch it? Because if they are for me, and it's very impressive being off 4.5 months, but you were in playoff hockey. You played it. Do you see this? Do you see that level?
Yeah. You know what? The thing about playoff hockey is there's, you know, you can't win on the perimeter. I really believe that's the biggest difference between regular season and playoffs. You got to jam it down someone's throat. You can't just try to make nice plays and perimeter plays. You got to come back. It's all got to funnel towards the net. And so I like seeing the skill that can combine the power move and make a play towards the net. And that's where I think the fun challenge of these guys comes, you know, the playoff hockey that you said you're looking at and you say that's playoff hockey is when a skill guy battles through the slot and makes a skill move in the crease and finds a way to score a goal. And that's where I like, you know, you watch guys like Taves, who's got his nose dirty and, you know, he has nothing left to prove, but in his head, he wants to be that guy that makes a skill play in tight, in around the net, and is willing to pay the price.
We've talked a lot about how good teams are and everything. And to me, it seems like, and this is the last one for me, to me, it seems like the key here as we go along is going to be mental toughness, even more than maybe in the regular playoffs, because there are no distractions. There's no family to go home to. There's no escape to your favorite lake to take your boat out. You're pretty much a captive audience for up to 2 months if you make it to the final. And mentally, I would imagine as a player, that's got to be very draining. So mentally, it's always tough in the playoffs. Is this going to be even tougher?
Yeah, I think, to be honest, I don't think that, you know, when I got into playoffs, I lived in a bubble anyway. I kind of ignored my family and ignored everything around me. I wasn't paying bills. I wasn't doing anything. It was hockey all the time. The only time that it matters is, you know, Carolina sweeps, and now they're sitting there going, oh, what do? We don't know who we're playing. We're just sitting here waiting. I think that becomes the challenge, is what do you do then? That's when boredom can set in. Whereas a regular one, you know, coach, take 2 days off and you can blow the doors out and forget about hockey for a little while. So that's the only challenge that I see. Other than that, you're in the mix and you're ready to play hockey, and that's all you're thinking about.
Well, that's all we get to watch, so it's good, right? And we got a lot more of it to come, man. It's fun. Hal, thanks for jumping on with us. Appreciate it, all right?
Yeah, thanks for having me, guys, and enjoy the games. This is a crazy year, but we're making it a lot of fun now, I think, so it should be a good ride.
Thanks to Hal for jumping on with us. Always good to catch up with him. He had punted on the question, Sean, but I gave my opinion at the top of the show here. I said I would stick with UC Saros. What would you do? What's your opinion? Would you go to Rene or would you stick with Saros?
I think I would go to Rene, and look, I think John Hines is in a really good position, and I thought he was from the very beginning. To me, there were so many goaltending questions going into this best of five series, these qualifiers, but none more complicated than the one in Nashville. You have a young kid with no real playoff experience, who was clearly the better goalie before the break, and then you have this rejuvenated veteran who, you know, has played more playoff games with the franchise, basically took them from, you know, being a quasi-contender to the Stanley Cup final and being a legitimate, you know, top four team in the Western Conference for the last couple of years. And so what do you do? And he went with Saros and, you know, kind of got burned a little in that first period of game one. And, you know, stuck with him. He had a better game two. I thought he was okay in game three. His counterpart was fantastic. But I think maybe you want to drop a grenade in that room. To me, it sometimes feels like Nashville needs to wake up a little bit. I think they're a better team than Arizona. They haven't really shown it yet. They've played better for long stretches, but then have, you know, a mental breakdown or whatever it might be. I think maybe if you're John Hines, you drop a grenade in that room and you say, look, you guys cost UC Saros his chance, and I'm going to go with the veteran. I'm going to go with the guy that, you know, we're going to put it all on the line, and you know, you make me right. You play for him, you play for yourselves, and let's force a game seven and make me make another decision.
See, I would agree with you if they didn't play well in game three. I thought they were the better team, like we talked about with Hal Gill. I thought they played well. I thought Darcy Kuemper was terrific. And if not for Matt Duchene's little error there, and I think they had three players going to the puck to step on the game-winning goal and leaving Connor Garland. It was a great play. You know, that's a mistake. I don't put that on Saros. So I would stick with Saros. You got Rene. But here's another thing that we should talk about. We have not talked about this yet, and we're going to get to it. It's a perfect lead into our next guest, Sean, Brady Shea. The Carolina Hurricanes have this long wait now to play their next game, to find out who their next opponent is, and they can't go anywhere. They're in a bubble. They can't do anything. And even Rod Brind'Amour, after the game against the Rangers, game three when they won, said this is the trickiest part. What do you do? There's no planning for this. You can't come up with a plan. You have to come up with a plan on the fly for this, and that's what they have to do right now.
Yeah, and look, Rod's a smart guy, and you know what? I think Carolina is one of those teams. They're perfectly situated to do that. I love the videos you know, that they thought ahead of time and they were like, hey, let's collect some videos from all the families. If we win, you know, we'll show them as a reward. It's kind of like that Survivor when the families come out to visit about halfway through Survivor to give the contestants a lift. It was, to me, it kind of had that same feeling. So clearly this is an organization that thinks outside the box a little bit. You know, I think they'll try and do some creative things with their team. Great leader in Justin Williams, it's kind of like being on the road permanently, right? You think about having to go and play a big game six or a big game seven on the road, or that two game, you know, game one and two, where you spend 5 to 7 days on the road because of the breaks between games. And you just keep doing it over. But before we get to Brady and before we talk about anything else, the other thing that, you know, I want to talk about a little bit about that series, and you probably felt this more than maybe even I did because I didn't cover the Rangers a ton early on in my career here, but this could be the last time we see Henrik Lundqvist as the goaltender of the New York Rangers. And it's been a generation of Ranger fans have grown up with Henrik Lundqvist as the guy. And there's a very good chance that come next year, he's not a part of their equation. And I'm really glad he got the opportunity to play. And I thought he played well. He wasn't good enough in game two. I thought he was pretty good in game one. But I'm glad he got that opportunity to kind of, if he does go out with the Rangers, to go out on his terms.
Yeah, I 100% agree with you. Because if this had continued on, if the regular season had continued on, he wasn't going to be a part of it. You know, whether they were going forward into the playoffs or if they were just, you know, in a playoff race and eventually fading out of it, he wasn't a part of it. He was the third guy. That's just the way it was playing out. This pause and the restart gave him an opportunity to reestablish a little bit. He did. He was the guy that they tabbed for game one, shockingly, a little bit surprised, you know, that nobody expected that Igor Shesterkin would come up with an injury the night before game one, but that's exactly what happened. So he was unfit to play in game one and then in game two. And I think it was the right move for David Quinn to go to Shesterkin once he was healthy enough to play game three. He didn't win it, but he was fine. I thought Lundqvist was okay. He wasn't the reason they lost. Their goaltending was not the reason they lost in that series. But in the bigger picture, yeah, I think it should be the end for Henrik Lundqvist. But Sean, how is it going to be the end for Henrik Lundqvist? That's the question, because trading him is going to be very difficult unless they eat salary in a trade. And who really wants a 38-year-old goaltender at this point? Buying him out is an option, but now you're paying him over 2 years and it's already a flat cap. And Kevin Shattenkirk's number goes up on a buyout to $6 million next year. Does he retire and leave the money on the table to go play with his brother Joel in Sweden? I mean, I would imagine he would demand a buyout so he gets his money out of it, you know? So I think it is going to be the end. I think it's the time is right for it to be the end. The torch has been passed, so to speak. He's a legend. His number is going to go up into the rafters. He should be in the Hall of Fame. But it's just a question of how does it end? But I think it's better that it ends where he at least got a chance to play, rather than him just kind of fading out and being the third goalie and even, you know, the token backup at times, you know, like that wasn't a good way for it to go.
Hall of Fame. That's strong. I don't know if I'm going that far yet.
He's a Hall of Famer in my mind. No, there's absolutely.
To me, the testament to Henrik Lundqvist is he didn't give up. He went home to Sweden. He worked on his game. He came back to training camp. You know that he wasn't the number one. David Quinn didn't want him to be the number one. I don't even know if he wanted him to be the number two, right? Because he had kind of relegated him for so long. I don't know that that's something you do to somebody you want to count on. And Henrik Lundqvist said, I'm going to prove you all wrong. And he came back and he had a great camp. And he wouldn't have started if Igor had stayed healthy, but he didn't. And you know, he got his opportunity. And I think that is the perfect example of who Henrik is. And the other great part about it is when the Rangers had the letter and they said, look, we're rebuilding, we're going to tear it apart, Henrik stayed and he said, I'm going to help this team get back to the playoffs. And he delivered on his promise, and good for him.
I agree. I mean, the guy's sixth all time in wins. He had a .918 save percentage, .243 goals against. He's a Hall of Famer in my mind. He's been a legend for the team. There's no question about it, but the time has come. But let's get to one of his former teammates, a guy that hurt him in this series, actually, because Brady Shea played a big role in that three-game series. He had the big hit on Jesper Fast that set that really set the tone for game one. We'll talk to him about that. He had the assist on Warren Fogle's game-winning goal in game three with the shot from the point. We had a chance to catch up with Brady right before he was heading to practice on Thursday morning. So here's that interview with Brady Shea. Brady, thanks for hopping on with us. A three-game sweep of your former team. Man, that had to feel good, huh?
Yeah, it did. Our team came out. We were ready to play. I think, we brought a ton of energy to the series. And, it felt good finishing out there in three games.
What do you think, other than obviously you mentioned being ready to play, and you guys certainly had a fast start in game one, what do you think the biggest difference was between yourself and the Rangers in the series?
I just think we play to our system, which doesn't give the other team much time and space. We kind of, we try to pressure the puck all over the ice and try to play aggressive. And I think that really, really helped us in the series. We limited their top guys to some space that they usually have, and we capitalized on our opportunities when we got the chance. So I think that puck pressure that we play with was probably the biggest thing in this series.
And I thought you had a big impact in this series too, right from the get-go. With that hit on Jesper Fast, 30 seconds into game one, you guys score 30 seconds later. Was that, do you believe that hit, anybody could have delivered it, but you did, set that tone for your series and really helped you, especially, you played seven games with Carolina months ago. And then you came in and you had a training camp. Did that help you? And did that set the tone for the series, do you think?
I think it definitely set the tone for that game or that first period. I think, obviously our bench was pretty fired up after the hit, and they had a few big hits after that. So that first period, there was a lot of bodies getting thrown around. Obviously I wanted to make an impact on the series, and my juices were going the first period, actually throughout the whole series, but that first period it was pretty strange playing against guys you were with for the last 5 years. So I tried to do what I could to help out, and obviously I'm not trying to hurt Quickie at all. I was kind of never trying to injure someone, and I talked to him since, and he's doing good, so that's good. But yeah, I think that was definitely I definitely set the tone for that game, and maybe for the whole series.
What's it like? You played against a couple of the Hurricanes throughout your career, and now you're on the other side. And I think about, getting to watch Aho play and that top line go, as opposed to defending him. It must be a much more pleasurable experience.
Yes, it is. those guys are special. Not only do they have, all the skill in the world and, can make plays and find each other, but they also defend extremely well. They work really hard. They're hard to play against. For young guys, especially Aho and Svechnikov, who are even younger than Turbo, their commitment to play defense and their work ethic is pretty incredible for how young they are in this league. So, I'm definitely enjoying being on this side of that line. It's a lot better experience.
I would definitely imagine that'd be the case. Okay, so you win in three, and now you got time. We don't know how, at least a week probably from the time you play maybe to the next game. You're in a bubble. You can't really go anywhere. You can't go home and see see family or anything like that. How different is this, Brady, now as you look ahead to these next several days of waiting and watching and not knowing who you're playing versus what it normally would be, in a normal playoff setting? And how do you manage this time now?
Yeah, I think I'm kind of looking forward to a few days. We played three games in 4 days, and it was, a hard-nosed series, a lot of hits, and it'll be nice to get a few days just to kind of relax here and get your body feeling a little better. And then we'll have, days to prepare for the next series. It's obviously different being in this bubble, but we've been able to stay busy. We have a team room that we can go to and hang out with the guys, and they have golf simulators here. And so the bubble, there's definitely stuff to do in here. Obviously, we miss our, our families and our, you know, significant others and stuff. But we're trying to stay as busy as we can in the bubble. And, you know, I'm definitely taking these next few days to try to relax and get the body back to feeling 100%.
What's your bubble vice of choice? We've seen some videos, obviously, out of Carolina. There's board games. I know there's a big poker game that goes on. You mentioned the golf simulators. What's the thing you do with all your free time?
I'm at the poker table quite a bit. I like to play cards. We probably have a group of 8 or 9 that play at the table. And then we've also been playing a lot of golf. We'll grab the putters and the balls and we'll kind of just putt up and down the hallways. So it's I'm usually golfing or playing poker when I get time off or watching other games.
Yeah, I was going to ask, how much hockey are you guys watching, especially now that you're watching to see who you might play next? You know, you had Tampa and Boston yesterday, and you got Washington and Philly, you know, going on today, Thursday, as we record this. Is it a lot of paying attention, scouting, or is it just chilling, sitting back, and watching a hockey game?
I'd say it's a little bit of both. I think we'll have the games on in the team room all the time. We actually got 2 TVs in there. So usually we'll have the game going, and then, you know, this week we'll have the PGA Championship going too. So there's been a lot of golf and a lot of hockey being watched in that team room. I think we're doing a little bit of both scouting and also, you know, watching just to watch. So it's been good.
Brady, obviously, you know, this is an ideal a way to conduct the playoffs, living in a bubble and all the things that go on. But I'm wondering, especially for your team and yourself individually, the Hurricanes turned over a little bit, especially on their blue line at the trade deadline, gearing up for the playoffs. And then there's a huge stop. You're isolated from everybody. You come back together. Is this almost for you and for some of those other guys a blessing in disguise because that bonding period is so accelerated because there's no going away? Like in this situation, you'd probably go away for 3 or 4 days, spend time with your family, rest and relax, and then get back and practice. But there's none of that. So does this accelerate that whole team building process for you guys?
Yeah, I think it does. I think this team has been unbelievable to me and the new guys that came in. They've been really welcoming. And, you know, I felt like I got to know the guys pretty well. And even the two and a half weeks that I was here and in February and March. No, it's been great. Even the training camp we had in Raleigh, we were able to hang out as a group. So definitely the team bonding has been, I would say, accelerated. And this bubble obviously helps with, you know, you're always around the guys. So I'm getting to know the guys really well and really quick.
You mentioned something before the series against the Rangers. You said, I'm going to have a chip on my shoulder. And it was your first time traded. I'm curious, like, what was that feeling like, A, when you got traded, and B, when you realized you were going to be playing the team that traded you? Is it different than playing another team? Did it feel different throughout the whole series than playing just another team? Like, this was the team that, they gave you away. I mean, they didn't give you away. They traded you. But, like, they said, we are okay with not having you on our team, essentially.
Yeah, I mean, obviously my first time getting traded and team that I've, you know, been with for the last 5 years and, you know, actually been with since the organization I've been with since I got drafted in 2012. So, it was when I first got traded, it was definitely tough. I think, you know, we bought an apartment in the city and, you know, we're looking forward to staying there for a while, but things changed. And, you know, I think the nicest thing was that when I got traded, I was on a flight that night and playing a game the next day. It kind of got my mind off it really quick. And like I said before, the guys on this team made it really easy for me to jump in and be a part of the team. So that was awesome. But yeah, no, I was really looking forward to this series. That obviously I knew it was gonna be a little strange and a little different playing against guys you played with for the last 5 years, but no, I was ready to go. I was even during the quarantine, I was trying to stay in as good a shape as I can because I wanted to, you know, prove to the Rangers that I was, you know, you always try and play with that chip. Once you get traded, you want to, you know, show them that you know, that you think they made the bad decision, and I'm glad that, you know, we won three games.
Do you think at all about what's next? Are you watching these round robin games, and, you know, every time somebody wins or loses, trying to figure out, you know, okay, well, they're in the three spot now, maybe we beat them, or do you just try and wipe that out of your mind?
I think a little bit of both. I think, yeah, you always have your eye on it a little bit, but we're never really going to know until that the final game is played. So we're kind of just, I mean, for me personally, just kind of watching the games right now, and like we said before, kind of scouting and just watching for entertainment. So definitely have an eye on it, but I think they'll get a little more, I'll be a little more into it once it gets closer to the end.
There's also a chance that you guys, pretty good chance maybe, that you guys could get Dougie Hamilton in a lineup for game one of the next round. And there's even a remote chance of Brett Pesce, too. This is a deep blue line. You haven't played with Dougie. He was hurt when you got there. What have you heard about the impact and the difference that he makes when you're on his side? You've played against him, but when you're on his side, what have you heard about the impact and the difference that Dougie can make and how he can be effective for Carolina?
Yeah, he's obviously an elite defenseman. I mean, you can tell by it. Obviously, I'd be just playing against him for the last few years. He brings that offensive ability to the blue line and can really help a team's power play. So he's a huge piece for us, and we're looking forward to getting him back here soon. Not, I don't know exactly when he'll be back, but he's a huge part of this team, and we're pumped to get him back.
What struck you the most since you've joined the team? And obviously you'd have a huge part of bridging what's been the most unusual of circumstances about your captain and Justin Williams, and just the way that he's able to run a team. And, you know, you talked about those first 5 minutes and he gets in the huge fight there after you throw that big hit, which continued to send a message. What's, as you've gone through this, what's stood out most about him?
I think his leadership is probably the biggest thing that sticks out for me. In the locker room, he's a vocal guy. He's not afraid to, you know, speak up and get the team going. I think he's been around, obviously, for a long time and has won three Stanley Cups, so he knows what it takes. And when he speaks up, everyone's listening. So I think that leadership aspect of his game is really what helps this team the most.
Well, Brady, I think you got 5 minutes to catch a bus to go to practice, so we'll let you go. Thanks so much for hopping on with us, all right?
Awesome. Thanks, guys. Thanks for having me.
Thank Brady for hopping on with us before he had to hop on the bus, Sean. A couple of series we haven't talked about. Number one, let's get right to it. It could end tonight, Thursday night, Calgary and Winnipeg. Look, I mean, this has been a different type of series than I think we all expected. It started from game one with the Tkachuk hit on Scheifele and the reactions on both sides. The Winnipeg Jets come back. They win a game without Mark Scheifele, and now there's, you know, is Scheifele going to play? Is Laine going to play? We don't know. Then they lose games 3-6-2. Does Winnipeg have it in them to come back in this series? I'm not so sure. I don't know about that.
I think we're going to see a game five. I'm never going to count Winnipeg out. Like, you think about their year and everything that's happened. They lost, you know, two-thirds of their blue line, including their best player, Dustin Byfuglien, who was basically like, I don't want to play anymore. You know, they've suffered all kinds of injuries. All kinds of different things have happened. To me, Paul Maurice is better than any other coach at getting his team to buy into what's happened and, you know, putting it behind them, you know, and moving forward. I think Blake Wheeler does a really good job there. And look, Connor Hellebuyck wasn't good in game three. He gave up 6 goals. He was not up to his normal performances, but you're talking about a potential MVP candidate here. I think he has one more good game in him at least, and he's going to frustrate Calgary. And, you know, like I said, between Maurice and Hellebuyck and Wheeler, I'm never going to count Winnipeg out.
You know, it's interesting. Hellebuyck was a little defiant, especially after that loss in game three. You know, I used the word defiant for John Hines, too, with Nashville, basically saying they're going to have to work it. They're going to have to work hard, Calgary. They're going to have to come at me. They're going to have to do a lot if they want to win this series in game four. But I want to go back before we move on to the next one, which we'll also discuss Toronto-Columbus. What did you make of Paul Maurice's comments after the hits with Tkachuk on Scheifele, where Maurice is like, he's targeting the leg. He could have ended the man's career. I don't believe that Paul Maurice actually believes that. I really don't. I think he's playing a tactical mind game here.
I think there's some of that. I think there's always some showmanship. To me, the most telling quote of them all, and I could listen to Paul Maurice talk forever. We had him on the podcast.
Oh, he's great.
One of the favorite ones I've ever, I've done, because he's such a good talker. But he's like, if you sin once, are you a sinner? But if you sin 10 times, there's not really a question anymore. And I'm paraphrasing him to a level. Look, I think Tkachuk brought some of this upon himself, you know, with past behavior and the way that he plays the game hard, take no prisoners. So when something bad happens, you immediately jump to, you know, the worst case scenario. But I also think, you know, Paul was playing mind games with the Flames, with his own team, you know, and that's what you need to do. And his team responded in game two and maybe didn't have the legs in game three to continue that. But, you know, I had no issue with it. And I thought, you know, good on the Calgary coach Ward in the fact that he didn't fire back. He said, look, I know exactly what Paul's trying to do. Instead of pouring gasoline on the fire, he got the fire extinguisher out and took care of it nice and tidy.
Yeah. Yeah. I thought it was quite obvious what Paul was trying to do, but I don't mind that he tried to do it. There's no question about that. I mean, I think he got a sense of what was going on, especially after one game, and said, here we go, let's do it. And then you have, let's flip it around to the Eastern Conference. And the last series we'll talk about before we get out of here, you got the Columbus Blue Jackets and the Toronto Maple Leafs, tale of two different styles. And John Tortorella is very blunt and abrupt as well. They played well in game one. UC Saros was very good. They won the game 2-0. I'm talking about the Blue Jackets. They played their style, frustrated the Maple Leafs, no question. And then Tortorella was right. I'll use the word stinks. He used the other word. The Maple Leafs were all over the Blue Jackets in game two. This series is guaranteed to go at least until Friday, with game three tonight, Thursday at 8:00. It's two different styles. Honestly, I don't know who's going to get the better of this, because it's whoever gets their style going the right way is going to win this game. It was way too much for UC Corposalo, the Eunice Corposalo the other day, the way he was really good, but it was just way too much coming at him. If Toronto's going to play like that, they're going to beat anybody.
Look, Corposalo was so good. You know, he went 90 plus minutes as a rookie before he gave up a goal. I don't think there's any concerns there. You know, the matchups are going to be huge. You know, going forward, I think both teams are trying to dictate who plays against who. To me, one of the biggest things was Auston Matthews just dominated in game two. I mean, that's the player that everybody's been looking for, and he was flying, and he put them on his back, and off they went, you know. And how do things change now? Muzzin's hurt. He's not going to play in game three. John Tortorella, to me, is one of the greatest tactical coaches in the game. You saw what he did against Tampa Bay last year, you know, where he can, as a series goes on, he starts to figure out how to deploy his team to negate the other team. So it's such an interesting series. And like you said, they play tonight and then we get at least one more game. And I'm thinking we're probably going to get two. I think the differences here are razor thin.
I agree with you. And I agree with you about Tortorella. And I had asked him this question before the series began. Do you take some of what you did against Tampa last year and use it for Toronto, because the styles do seem a little similar? Can you the blueprint for beating Tampa, can that be the blueprint for beating Toronto for the Columbus Blue Jackets? And his answer was, we're going to do what we do. We don't make any apologies for what we do. We have a style. Everybody knows the way we're going to play, and we just have to play it. And they did in game one. They did not in game two. I picked the Blue Jackets to win this series. I am sticking with that pick, Sean. I think they win it in five. And I think you're going to see a style for the Blue Jackets come out tonight that's going to be a rested style, and it's going to be good, and they're going to play that way. I think it'll be enough, and then you'll see the skill come out in game four for the Leafs, and then I think with an extra day in between for game five, you're going to see Columbus play the way it knows how to play again.
Yeah, and I don't know if they draw anything tactic from that Tampa series, but they certainly draw something mentally from that series, and knowing that they can do it, and knowing one of the biggest things is, like, coaches know how to win. That's why they're in the position they're in. But it's the coach who can convince his team that they need to play in a way that maybe they don't enjoy playing, maybe doesn't completely suit them, you know, because of an opponent. It's those coaches that can convince, that can get their teams to buy in, that tend to succeed. And the biggest facilitator to buying in is past success, right? So any coach that's won, you know, Mike Sullivan makes a change tomorrow, his team's going to buy in because he's won. You know, if Keith makes a change for Toronto, maybe the guys are like, well, I don't know. Like, we've done this way this whole year. So there's some credibility in past performance. And I think Tortorella has that with the Blue Jackets because he showed that if they followed a certain path, they could beat a team that they shouldn't have beaten, that statistically should have been so far favored. And I don't think Toronto's there like Tampa Bay was. So I think it's even an easier buy-in because the teams are so equal.
And I'll leave you with this. It's going to change. I'm going to change to a different series. We haven't talked about it. But because of what you just said, Joel Quenneville is going to have to do that with the Florida Panthers for their game four against the New York Islanders on Friday. He's going to have to get his team, and he did it in game three, to do it again, buy in to play a style of play that they're not used to playing. Defensive, simple, predictable type of style, because that's how you beat the Islanders. You've got to play that way, because if not, they're gonna shut you down. But he doesn't have the past success with the Florida Panthers to be able to do it. So I think that's going to be a very interesting thing to watch. And I'll say that'll be the only thing I'll say about that series. But that's going to be interesting thing to watch, because of what you said with Tortorella and Columbus. It's going to be interesting to see how Quenneville, one of the best coaches of all time, is able to do that again with the Panthers.
He also doesn't have five more players to put in the lineup like he did for game three. I've never seen such wholesale changes, man. He just took every scratch he had and said, okay, boys, go out there and figure it out. So maybe he needs to find five more guys to put in the lineup tomorrow.
Yeah, we'll see. Lots of hockey still to come, Sean. This was fun today. I'm glad we were able to get Hal Gill and Brady Shea on. It's been great to watch the games, and there's more to come. So we'll do it again next week.
All right. Hopefully I'm back in my home office and not in the car again. But this has been quite an experience. I'm glad that I've done it. It'll be another thing to add to the scrapbook.
And your daughter heard the whole thing, right? So she doesn't even need to download and listen to the podcast, though she should do it anyway, as should everybody else. Thanks for listening. Everybody stay safe out there.